My goals in my life are to be a good father, to be... Fuck you.
Get loud, right past his home, Ben Carroll!
So the reason I'm single...
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah, because your wife stopped fucking me for free.
You guys ready to see your headline tonight?
Be like the exhibits at a pro-choice rally or something.
Welcome to the stage of the very funny Vince
Carone. And welcome to Peek Behind the Curtain. My name is Vince Carone. Thank you for listening. This is my 11th podcast, and this is the final podcast episode of 2019. I made it through the end of the year. Never thought I would, but this has been fun for me to dig into some archives of stuff that's happened in my career and allow me to reflect. I'm a half narcissist, so for me it's fulfilling that way. But I also get to share, and I've heard some great feedback from my listeners so far and what they like and what they want to hear more of. So I will be continuously reshaping this podcast as I go, and I'll probably be bringing on a guest once a month with me just to shake things up and get it a little bit different. But make sure you subscribe to my social media at Vince Carone on all platforms: YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, if that's still around, and all the rest of them. You can check and see if I'm on them. If I am, it's at Vince Carone. And go to my website, www.vincecarone.com, for any updates. I post all my podcasts there as well. Plus, I post some blogs and rants from my time on the road. So you get to see a lot of content and a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that I'm doing. My goal is to build this community around you and share the insights of what I do in my comedy career. So this week's episode is going to be called Best of the Midwest, about a comedy competition that I was in March of this year, 2019. And I'll tell you all about those details here in a minute. But let's talk about a little bit about what I've been doing since we last caught up. We've had, of course, the Christmas holiday, and I'm sure yours was just as exciting as mine, just seeing a bunch of family over and over repeatedly, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times within a 30-day period, and having the same conversations with everybody. So, are you still doing comedy? Yeah, I'm still doing comedy. That's cool. You still traveling? Yeah, I'm still traveling. It's like, you know, you're my family, and you would think that you would know that, because you would think you would check my website once in a while, but you don't. So that's okay. Happy to answer those questions for everybody. But this past week, right after the holiday, I got back on the road, and I wanted to just kind of put a bow on some of the material that I was doing from my vasectomy recording, as I'm going to continuously now start to work on new material, working towards my next album, you know, in the next couple of years here. So I did a show on Friday in Rockford, Illinois, at a place called Francesco's Ristorante, and I walked in, and they were like, hey, how do you, I just want to get it right, how do we say your last name? And I was like, Carone, this is Francesco's Ristorante, isn't it? You think you'd know how to say an Italian last name? But they're like, well, it's usually Carone, and they're probably right on that. But you know, so I gave my name, and so, you know, packed place, jam packed, like it couldn't be any better. I'm like, wow, I sold out. This is awesome. And in my head, I'm just thinking, this is so cool. They were like, it was almost standing room only in this place. And I was like, this is really cool, you guys. Like, we were able to sell this out tonight. And the guy running, it's like, yeah, we usually do it in the bigger room, but this is a slower week, so we moved it into here. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm not as big of a draw as I thought I was. You just, you took whatever I did draw and threw me into a smaller fucking room. Perfect. That's great for the ego. But still, I can still say I sold it out, because, you know, and I guess we can just do that anywhere I go. You know, 4 people show up, let's go have the show in the bathroom. Sold it out. But, anyway, so a very funny comedian named Diego, I don't even remember his last name. I should have looked it up before I did this podcast. I feel bad. I'll make sure I plug it into the notes of this podcast, but I'm a fucking idiot. But this very funny comedian named Diego, he opened the show, and he had some really funny stuff, had me laughing, and it was my turn to go up there, and I was going to do probably 45 minutes to an hour, depending on how the crowd was, feel them out along the way, and it was a wireless mic, and I've had issues with a wireless mic before at other places, and I don't like them. Most comedians don't like wireless mics. We want the wire. We want the certainty. I feel like my mom with technology at this point, like I don't trust those wireless mics, you know, but it's true. And, you know, within the first like 5 to 10 minutes of me being up there, I had the crowd like, on a roll. I was just doing really, really well with the first just couple lines just hit so hot. And the mic just started cutting out. And inherently, if you're a comedian, you know that the mic always cuts out at your punchlines and just fucks those up. And I know I'm visibly frustrated, but I'm trying to, you know, hard swallow, take a deep breath, and just barrel through it. But in my head, I'm actually trying to make the decision. Do I go without the mic or not? Because that's usually what I'll turn to. If it happens enough, I'll just put the microphone down and do it without a microphone. Because at that point, it's less of a distraction, even though I have to speak louder, and you know it's not the same kind of a night that the audience would be used to. And so it happened for probably the third or fourth time, and I made some hacky reference to this show is sponsored by Radio Shack or some fucking line that's been beaten to death and done forever, and the place laughed like it was completely original, and then that made me feel like shit on the inside too. But eventually I just put the microphone down. I said, "Can you guys hear me?" They said, "Yeah," and I just started doing my show like that. And what that caused me to do, as I'm a fast talker, it caused me to really slow down my material. I had to slow down my jokes, make sure every word was heard, enunciate more, and then I really had to wait for laughs on the in-betweens, meaning usually I'll tell like three jokes in a row and the first two just kind of carry over into a bigger laugh on the third one. And so I usually don't pause on those first two. I just let it build up, and then I take a breath after the third one and let them let all their laughter out. But here, if they started laughing, they wouldn't be able to hear me. So I couldn't let those first two jokes carry through to the third one. I had to pause at each individual one, which gets you three laughs instead of one, but it also disrupts some of the timing of the jokes that kind of need that carryover. And so it does throw a little bit of a wrench in that, but I was having some fun with them. There was a heckler up front, because the lighting on the stage caused some shadows. Like if you move too far right or left, you were completely like silhouetted to the audience versus lit up. And so I was like, all right, maybe I should stand right here instead of moving so much. And some lady up front's like, "Yeah, you're making me dizzy." And I look down, she's got like four empty glasses of wine in front of her. And I hit her with that. And I said something to the effect of like, I'm making you dizzy, not the four glasses of wine you guzzled down, you know, and the place went nuts. And, you know, we had some fun with that. But then what happened is, you know, maybe like 10 minutes later, I've got the crowd on my side. I'm doing it without a microphone. And then they bring up a speaker and a speaker stand, and they're setting that up and running the wires, and they're going to bring me a new mic. And it's very nice of them. They were trying to be very accommodating. It was all done from a good place. But for me, and they didn't know this, but for me, once I'm off the mic, I want to stay off the mic. I can't go from being on a microphone to off a microphone to back on a microphone while you're on stage, setting up behind me while I'm there, pausing in between the microphone cutting out. It's too many distractions for the audience and pulls them out of a show aspect. And now it becomes this fucking vaudeville act going on behind me. And I knew I shouldn't have taken the microphone when they gave it to me, but I did. And then what happened right from there is I had a 20-minute uphill battle to get the audience completely re-engaged. There was trickles of laughter for 20 minutes, but nothing, no momentum. And then finally, I was able to get them going again once the stink of the crazy shit was over. The audience finally came back around. And it's I think it's a dominance thing. When I took away the microphone, they got used to just having more of a conversation with me. And then when I grabbed it again, it asserted too much dominance, and it kind of breaks the trust, even though they're not thinking that consciously. I think that's subconsciously what is happening, is now it seems like I'm trying to be an authority by having a microphone to be louder than you when we were just kind of casually talking. It'd be like pulling out a microphone in your living room in front of your friends out of nowhere. They'd be like, "What the fuck is this?" And it would just kind of stun everybody for a little while. I think that's what happened. But we got through it. And then on Saturday night, I did a show in Aurora, Indiana, oddly enough. Aurora, Indiana. I didn't know that was a thing, but it's right on the border of Cincinnati and right on the border of Kentucky as well. And I set this up. There's a funny comedian named Logan Cummins. He set this up for me. And I'm really trying to get into more breweries and set it up to where I have some control over the door, so I can work door deals in places and start to try and draw on my name in smaller venues to see how I can do. versus going to, you know, one place for six shows? Can I go to one place for one show and see what I can do and see if I can build an emailing list and a following that way? So that's what I'm trying to do. And this was my first shot at it. And we did pretty well. The room held 100. I think we did close to 75 to 80 ticket sales, which was pretty good, you know. So I felt good about that. Maybe 70, 75, I can't remember exactly, but it was good. The show went well, and there's a couple of funny comedians on there with me as well. And it was a fun night. But I left my house at 2:30 in the afternoon on Saturday to get out there. Got there, it was a 4.5-hour ride. I did the show, got right back in my car, got on the ride home, and, you know, stopped a couple times along the way to get some coffee and a few other things, and walked back in my door at 4 a.m. So that is the life as a stand-up comedian. When people are like, "Is it fun? You're out there partying all the time?" No, you're fucking you're leaving as late as you possibly can to get to the gig. You're doing your gig, and then you're getting back in your car so you can sleep in your own goddamn bed. Like, I've stayed in enough roadside motels to last me a lifetime. I want to be in my own bed, even if it means sacrificing half the night of sleep. But advice for any comedians listening is if the microphone situation ever happens to you, you know, think about what you would do in that situation in advance, and just think through it. So when it does finally happen, and it will, it'll inevitably happen to everybody at some point. Think of what you're going to do and how you're going to handle it, because walking off stage until they fix it isn't an option. So think of how you want to go about it, how you want to approach it, and be ready for that moment to happen, because it's going to happen to you, and it's okay. The audience trusts your decisions. Remember that. They're going to trust you and what you decide to do with it, and you're their leader in the night. So be the leader and be confident about whatever decision you make. And then separately, lastly, there's a lot of stuff this week to give you before we get into the episode here. But I set up my photo shoot for my new album. My new album will be released at the end of January online. So sign up for my mailing list on my website at vincecarone.com to be the first to know about when it's going to be released. Now let's get into this week's topic: Best of the Midwest. So I'm gonna give you a quicker background on this today, and then I'll spend the majority of the content on the actual contest itself. So this is a contest, Best of the Midwest contest. And now, traditionally, before I even go into this, I just got to tell you, I hate comedy contests. I've done enough of them in my career because they're necessary. They're a necessary evil. I will still continue to do them if I need to. Some festivals are just that you go up and you do a showcase and you're at the festival, and some other comedy festivals are contests, and that's just the way it goes. But I hate them because, you know, generally, like, I want to be on the same side as a comedian. I want to show up, and we're all brothers or sisters in arms is what we are. And it's always us bonded together, no matter what. You know, great crowd, shitty crowd, the comedians, we're bonded together. That's the battle we go into together. And I want to root them on. And I've never been a comic to where I want somebody to do bad in front of me. I want you to crush so fucking hard in front of me that you make me sweat with nerves and make me work my ass off for an hour, because those are the shows that have made me better over the years. I've never, ever in my life, I don't think I've ever been accused of wanting to set myself up for an easy show, and I certainly would never invite that. Give it your all, give it your best, make me work. But contests make me feel the other way. They, you know, as much as outwardly I want to wish everybody luck, on the inside you want to win the contest. So to want to win, you have to wish that other people lose. And I don't like that. I don't like feeling pitted against the other comics. To me, it's me against the audience. Let me win you over. I don't want to be against the other comics to where, you know, my joy of the night comes at somebody else's, like, you know, confidence killer, or, you know, or lack of excitement. I don't want that. But they are necessary. And every year in Grand Rapids, Michigan, there's a large festival called Gilda's Laugh Fest. And it's for Gilda Radner, and I believe she's from there originally. And they put on like a couple week festival, and they bring in a bunch of big name comedians and run a bunch of different types of shows all the way. And so what they do is they have a segment called Best of the Midwest, and they pick, they meaning the bookers of this contest, of this festival, who are bookers that I work for at other clubs. They pick, you know, anywhere from 6 to 8 comics that they book throughout the Midwest. And they invite you to be a part of this contest. So different than other contests where you can submit your material and try and get into it, you can't submit here. They have to just pick you. And so, So over the past few years, a lot of my buddies have gotten picked for it, and they've gone on, and a couple of them have won it and have done great things. And it was really cool. And in this past year, I got the email saying that I was chosen to be a part of it, which was, to me, that was already a victory. And to me, I was able to wrap my head around, that it was such a victory already to be at the contest that I didn't have to feel, that way about wanting to win it. I already felt like a winner, as cheesy and as a quotable movie quote as that could possibly be. I already felt like a winner by just being at this event. I was already being recognized by my peers for being there, which is really cool. And so, but you know, I do want to put in the work to try and win it, since I'm gonna go. And so it was really cool because there's a showcase in Chicago called Comedians You Should Know, and it's a group of comedians out of Chicago that are the producers of this, and they've been running the show for a long, long time now, and they've always got great crowds and packed houses, and they invited me to come on out, and coincidentally, it was the night before. I was going to be going to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they wanted me to do a set that night. And I got there, and a comedian I know named Danny Callis, a real funny Chicago guy, was talking to me before. And he's like, "Hey, you're doing the Best of the Midwest tomorrow, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "So this is perfect. This worked out great. So you get to practice your set here tonight." And it just locked me in going, "Yeah, that's exactly what I need to do tonight." And I just thought it was really cool that one of my peers also knew that's what I was doing the next day. Like Danny Callis and I, we get along great, but we don't call each other. We're not friends. We're not hanging out. You know, we're comedian buddies. You know, we got nothing against each other. We root for each other. But I thought it was great that my peers knew what I was doing as well, because in comedy, that's what you really want. You want your peers to respect you and cheer you on, and that felt really good to have that support. So I got in my car. It was I believe it was a Thursday night. Or a Thursday afternoon, and the show was Thursday night, and I was heading up to Grand Rapids, and on my way up there was a massive hailstorm, and you know, like now my 3-hour ride's turning into like a four and a half hour ride. I'm gripping the wheel, I'm white knuckling, trying to get there on time to hang out with everybody, and of course that's gonna happen, that's gonna go wrong, but I on the way there, I'm just trying to think, like, I ran a set the night before, Comedians You Should Know, but I'm also now going, I've got to do two sets tonight at this Best of the Midwest festival. I'll explain how they run it after the break here, but I have to do two sets. And so I called up one of my comedian buddies, Ben Hamilton, who had just hit the road with me for a series of dates, the month prior. So he got to hear a bunch of the material I'd been running. And I said, "Hey, I got this contest. I get like eight or nine minutes or something of that nature. What should I do?" And before I even finished, he said, "Gay marriage. Do your gay marriage material." And I said, "You sure?" And he's like, 100%. "If you got 8 minutes, that's an 8-minute bit. Do that." And he said it so confidently, I just locked in and said, "Okay, that's what I'm doing." So that was leading up to there. Let's take a quick break here from our sponsors. And then on the other side of the break, I'll talk to you about the actual contest itself. All right, so now I'm in Grand Rapids. I meet up with all the other comics. I'm there with Chelsea Hood, and I'm there with Kelly Collette. I'm there with Sam Rager. I'm there with DJ Dangler. I'm there with there's one more that's slipping away from me at the moment. But I'm there with all these funny comedians, and a lot of them I'm meeting for the first time. I knew Chelsea from Chicago, but I'm meeting some of the others for the first time. And TJ Murph was supposed to be there, and he ended up getting stuck in Chicago. He couldn't make it. But we're all having a drink and some appetizers, and we're hanging out with the bookers and the staff, and we're all just having some laughs, putting each other at ease before the show. We get the order for the sets, and they show us what we're going to do. So there's two rooms set up at the exact same time in this venue. It's a venue called The Bob, and it's where Dr. Grin's Comedy Club is, but it's a huge venue. And they have multiple bars and multiple levels within this building. So Dr. Grin's Comedy Club is going to be running one of the shows for a sold out crowd. And so all six of us comics are going to go up there, you know, in a 1-6 order, and we will do our 8 minutes for that crowd. Well, at the same time, while that show is running across the hall, there's another sold out show with a different audience across the hall. And so here's how it works. Comic number one goes up into Dr. Grin's Comedy Club, and they do their 8 minutes. Comic number six goes up into the other room, or comic number, comic number four goes up in the other room, and they do their time for that audience. And then when comic number one is done in the first room, they come to the second room to be the fourth comic in that room. And when the first comic's done in this one room, they go to the other room to be the fourth comic in that room. And I'm pretty sure that confused the living shit out of everybody listening, because as I'm explaining it, I can't even picture it, and I was at the fucking place. But just to simplify it, there's three comics on each stage, and you're just walking to the other stage the second you're done. So you have probably like a 5 minute like lapse before you're going up on stage in the other room. And so I ended up being the third comic in the first room. And I ended up being, I believe, the fourth or fifth comic, however the math works, in the other room. But anyway, I go up in the first room, and a super funny comedian named Kelly Collette, she opened the show after the MC, and she was hilarious. I mean, she just tore this place apart, and super funny, did great. And, I was cracking up the whole time. And I remember talking to her and Sam and a few of the other comics before, and you know, we were all just kind of just chatting about the contest, and I was just letting them all know kind of where my head was at. Like, you know what? Like, you're here. You're going to get booked at this club now. You've already won. This contest is now, it's up to judges, and it's out of our control. You've already made it. They chose you to be here. You're going to get more work out of this. That's the victory. And I truly believed that. It wasn't just smoke and mirrors. I truly believed that. And then watching them go up and just kill it was awesome. And then a super funny comedian named DJ Dangler went up, and him and I have similar styles in that we're quick paced and ranty. And he went up and he blew the roof off the place. He did a great job. And then I went up and I opened with a couple things about traffic. I have an old traffic rant that I used to do, and I did the first few lines of that just because they're very quick, and you can attach yourself to some jokes really, really fast. Whereas the gay marriage bit I'm going to be doing, it has a couple lines of setup before I get to a joke, and I wanted to start out a little hotter. So I did a few lines of my traffic rant, and then I did a few lines about having a vasectomy. And then I launched into my gay marriage thing, and I only got about halfway through my gay marriage rant in that first show because I just ran out of time. But the way it was timed is I ended on a huge, huge punchline from that show, and from that bit rather, and the place went nuts, and so I was able to exit like on such a high. And then I didn't get to see the three people after me because I had to immediately go to the other room to get in line to perform in that room. But I remember being up there, and like the first 2 minutes of jokes that I did about traffic and the vasectomy, they did well. I got some applause, and I did well. And then I went to the gay marriage thing, and it just kept building and building and building, and ended on such a high that I wasn't thinking about winning, but I remember just leaving going, dude, I fucking nailed it. Like I definitely nailed this set right here. And I go across the room. To go across the hall into the other room, and DJ Dangler's over there, and he is just murdering it 10 times harder than I just did in this other room. And I'm thinking, holy shit. Like, I just watched him do really well, so I knew he had it in him, but this crowd just hung on every word he said, and he just mopped the fucking floor with this place, and just everything he said was killing it. And as I was saying, like, that's what I want, like, because it makes me rise to another level now. Now I've got to immediately shake off like the, wow, I did great in this room. I can't hold that in high regard anymore, because I've got to come be ready to bring it all over again, because DJ just set the bar at another level. And so I went after him, and I decided I'm just going right into my gay marriage rant. I think I did one traffic joke and went right in, because I wanted to get the entire gay marriage rant out. And with ranting, if people get on board with what I'm doing really quick, I will murder a room. But conversely, and probably the same for everybody, but if there's hesitancy to, what's he doing? Is he complaining? Is he ranting? Is it funny? Is it, you know, he said gay, is it going to be, you know, pro or con? Like, you know, if there was any hesitancy at all, I'd be dead where I started, but dead in the water, I guess, is the quote. But they came on board so fast that I ended up just applause break after applause break, and I stayed on that one theme the entire time, so it was very easy to remember which guy I was up there. And that's one thing I do know about contests when there is an audience and judges voting is the more memorable you are, the easier it is for them to vote for you, of course. To any younger comics listening, you know, it's not saying it's the only way to go do it or the right way even to go do it, but I think it helps you to do something that would be memorable. In this case, I was the gay marriage comic at that point. Like, I didn't talk about anything else, so I was that guy. So I had an identifier with me for the contest, which I think helped. But I think as I'm going through that second set, I felt so strong about my set and what I did. And then we get off the stage and the show's over, and I watch the other few comics, and we're all just talking afterwards. And, you know, every comic, you know, has a sigh of relief. And then there's also this like nervous energy now of like, am I going to win? And we're all acting like we don't care. And, you know, I really truly believe we don't care, but we have to care because that's why we're there. And so what they did was they got TVs in both of these rooms. And they put our pictures up there with like a voting bar, like a percentage, like you'd see on American Idol on your TV at home, showing like where we're at being voted for by the audience. And like it's showing our percentages move up and down based on the votes that are coming in live time. And I just looked at the rest of the comics. I can't fucking watch that. That'll drive me nuts. There's no way I'm sitting in here watching that. They got to get that off the TV. And we all laughed and they all agreed, and we left. And so we went downstairs, and we all had a drink or whatever we did, and we're all just chatting. And they had like an awards ceremony, and they brought all of us comics up there to get some photos and stuff. And that was cool to me. That's the funnest part about all of it, just hanging out with the other comics, getting to know them. And they're getting ready to announce the winner, and I just had a strong feeling that I took it. I was just, you know, not cocky, just confident that I felt like. I've been in many contests, by the way, that I got my ass handed to me and knocked out first round, voted dead last, you know, didn't make it anywhere. Like, that's happened to me a bunch too. So I know the feeling when I nail it, when I don't. And I felt like I had the set, I had the momentum, I had the confidence, and I ended up winning. They announced my name, and it's always for as narcissistic as I can be, like, it's an awkward moment for me to win. Like, as much as I want spotlight in certain areas of life, like, that becomes very very uncomfortable to me to win, because I feel like I can't smile. Like, I have to like just act like, oh cool, you know, and like act like it's no big deal, you know, for the other comics' sake too, like, you know, just downplay it and just, you know, and then immediately tell all them how awesome they were. And I meant it, but like, you feel like you have to do that versus celebrating your own victory. And that's why I don't like the contest, because it's not like, hey, this person just got a TV special, you know, go high five them and congratulate them. It's, oh, hey, this person got a TV special because you didn't. It's like, it just seems like I win because somebody else loses, and that's a hard thing to accept. But all the other comics were so awesome. We had they couldn't have been cooler, and I won a nice plaque, and I won a $2,500 prize for it as well. And I was also getting $250 just for doing the show. We all got paid that with a hotel room and drinks and everything covered just for doing the show. Or I think it was around $250, somewhere around there. But after I only tell you that. Usually I won't discuss money, but afterwards I called my wife and I'm telling her, and people are like, was she excited for you? I'm like, well, I called her and I told her I won the $2,500. She's like, that's awesome. Do you still get that other $250, or do they take that out of the $2,500? I started laughing, because like that's the fucking concern right now, whether I won $2,250 or $2,500, you know. And of course I got both of them. So it was just, it was a fun night, and we were headed to Vegas, a week later to open, when I was opening up for Brad Garrett. So the money came in handy for me to go piss away in Vegas. So if there is a silver lining for any of the other comics who are on that show with me, is know that, I lost all that money in Vegas cause I was a gambling degenerate asshole. So, maybe best of the Midwest for the night, but, worst fucking blackjack player in Vegas. But, So that was how I won that. And then this year I got a nice message saying that I'll be coming back for the Best of the Midwest this year, doing four sets a night, Friday and Saturday, March 14th and 15th, or 13th and 14th, whatever the Friday and Saturday is. And it's more, it's not a contest. It's kind of like a Best of the Midwest All-Star Showcase, where they're bringing back a bunch of previous winners and contestants. And we're all just going out there and having a good time. And that is something I can wrap my head around and look forward to, because that sounds like an absolute blast to me, and I can't wait to do it. So that is me as the Best of the Midwest, and I'm sure I will tell other stories on here about how I was the worst comic on the bill plenty of times in my life. But as far as what's coming up for me next, I just posted my first quarter tour dates for my Burden of Proof tour on my social media. So go check out Facebook or Instagram. Go subscribe at Vince Carone for that. And my new album will be out at the end of January. So it's called Vincectomy, and I'll have it online by the end of January, and I'll have some physical copies as I hit the road on my Burden of Proof tour. And I'm working on a book, okay? And I don't want to tell you anything more about that right now until I get some more details on it, but I'm working on a book. I'm hoping to have it out by the end of the quarter, first quarter, and more on that in a future episode. And next week's episode is going to be called The Album I Never Recorded, It Could Be Worse. And that was going to be the name of it. And I will tell you how I wrote an album. If you notice, if you follow my discography, if you follow the albums I've released over the course of time, you'll see that I usually release them every 2 years. But you'll notice that in 2009, I released Thanks for the Clap. And in 2014, I released No Complaints. And there was a 5-year gap in the middle there. Well, in 2012, I was supposed to release It Could Be Worse. I was supposed to record it and release it. And that's when I got sick. And you can hear that in my Misdiagnosed with Cancer episode that I did, I think, in the third podcast episode. But and I never released it, and I ended up writing all new different stuff and released No Complaints. And I'll walk you through some of the material that was on it, why I chose to end up never recording it even after I got sick, and just kind of talk about what that album was and what happened during that 5-year stretch there. So subscribe to all my social media, YouTube channel, like my Facebook page, follow me on Instagram and Twitter, all those, at Vince Carone. I post new videos, send me any questions you have, and go read some rants on my website. I really appreciate you you following me for the final quarter of this year, listening to my podcast. I hope you all have a great New Year's, and just remember, be safe out there. New Year's resolutions are like assholes. Everyone has one, and yours gets fucked if you go to jail. Have a good one.